Well, first of all, I would like to thank organizers of this workshop for letting me talk. In this talk, I intend to introduce a universal approach to modeling biological growth in a variety of anatomical parts, including tumors as well. And in this talk, I will demonstrate how the so-called grid model, growth as random iterated diffeomorphisms model, can be used to infer some growth properties of the winged Drosophila disc. Well, and here is the title of my talk. By the way, the grid model is a natural extension of the field of a computational anatomy where shape dissimilarities have been modeled using smooth deformations or so-called diffeomorphisms. The grid model has been proposed by Ulf Greenander, who is the founder of pattern theory and who is currently my co-supervisor. He has been providing me with a good guidance in dealing with this challenging problem of modeling biological growth. And here is an overview of my talk. I will first talk about larval development of normal Drosophila wing disc, and then I will introduce a pattern theoretic model for biological growth called GRID. I will also formulate the inference problem, and I will formulate it, which will consist of the unconstrained optimal control optimization problem formulation, and then I'll talk about the solution of the inference problem. I have placed this image here to appreciate the logic of the fly self-assembly. This image shows the fruit fly larva, and it shows that the separate parts of the fruit fly, like head and epidermis, grow out of so-called imaginal discs. What are imaginal discs? These are hollow sacs of cells. They look like inflated balloons, and we are primarily interested in the wing imaginal disc. In fact, here is the wing region out of which grows the wing at metamorphosis stage of development, and there is also nautil region of the wing disc out of which grows the body wall of the Drosophila. And imaginal discs are simply groups of epithelial cells which give rise to adult fruit fly structures. Well, larval development of normal Drosophila disc. With the optical imaging technique called confocal microscopy, we are capable of lighting up expressions of gene expression patterns of genes involved in the wing disc formation. Here we are looking at the dynamics of the gene expression pattern, and this gene is called wingless. This gene has been discovered as a mutation that removes the wing of the Drosophila, and here we observe that that the expression pattern of the wingless protein changes with over time and space. So basically, the gene expression pattern of wingless represents basically, what is the gene expression pattern of the wingless? It is basically the distribution of the densities of the protein that changes over space and time. And we observe that pattern of gene expression is tightly linked to the program of growth of the Drosophila wing disc. And we observe that here the pattern of wingless starts at the distal tip of the wing disc, and it remains constrained to the ventral part of the wing disc over time. And at the same time, there are other proteins functioning in the wing disc, and the other key regulatory genes are so-called apteris and vestigial genes. And the wingless protein functions in relation to the other key genes in the following manner. So wingless regulates the boundary of the apteris gene expression, and also it triggers the expression of the gene called vestigial that is required for identifying the wing subfield. And we also observe the dynamics of the gene expression of both key regulatory genes. The mature wing disc basically represents the geographic map with that is subdivided into regions, and each of the regions will give rise to a certain fruit fly structure. For example, here we observe that this overlapping area, overlapping stripe of apteris and wingless protein gives rise to the dorsal ventral margin of the future wing disc. So at the stage of metamorphosis, so this stripe of cells will become the margin of the wing, and as well, we observe that we also observe that there is a primary wing subfield is formed, and it consists of the dorsal part and ventral part of the future wing, and the blue area here shows the group of cells that will become the body wall of the Drosophila. So eventually, by the end of the larval stage of development, the wing fate map is formed as a result of action of these key regulatory genes. Again, the gene wingless, and this is apteris gene, the expression pattern of the apteris gene, and this is the expression pattern of the vestigial gene. Well, now, having acquired confocal micrographs of the gene expression patterns, we would like to infer the growth properties of the Drosophila wing disc directly from these images. And this data is given starting from the second instar larval stage of development and throughout the third larval stage of development. Well, and what we take into account is the evolution of brightness intensities of image pixels that corresponds to the concentration levels of the wingless protein. Again, the protein a primary job in regulating in wing in in pattern formation. Well, and at the same time, there are also other restrictions that growth of the wing is subject to. We do not take into account spatial temporal patterns of apterous and vestigial gene products, and we also do not take into account the evolution of the boundary between autumn and wing regions. I don't really show it here. And we don't take into account evolution of the anterior-posterior boundary in the wing disc. So we basically ignore the effects of secondary key regulatory genes to avoid additional complexity to already complex inference problem. There are also other biological facts that make two-dimensional grid modeling natural in this case. We know that cells divide randomly and uniformly throughout the wing disc at larval stage of development. Then cell number doubles on average every 9 hours during the second and early third instar, and most cell movements are due to passive displacements. And the disc epithelium is one cell thick only, and this makes to be grid modeling, well, appropriate. Well, now the question is, how do you model biological growth? Well, first of all, during growth, the wing locally expands and contracts, changing its shape and internal structure. And this means that its growth pattern can be represented by subsequent diffeomorphic transformations of the coordinates of the initial cellular field into the coordinates of the grown cellular field. Also, in the population of wing discs, the growth patterns exhibit variability from one disc to another. So, it is natural to model the growth pattern as a composition of random transformations. And these random transformations are biologically motivated with the underlying probability laws that characterize the intensity of elementary biological events, such as cell division, cell death, cell movements. Well, here, randomness basically is designated by this Xi seed. And Xi seed is the location of the elementary biological event, which is random in nature. So phi map depends on the location of this seed. Well, overall, the growth pattern can be defined as a cumulative deformation composed of elementary deformations, phi. And these elementary deformations are very small, have a very small effect. And basically, the deformations are concentrated around a focal point of local growth, again called a seed. And these seeds are distributed according to a spatial Poisson process on a time-varying coordinate system called Darcy, that I will introduce later. And we can deform the neighborhood around the scene using a certain radial deformation function k of tau. Tau is an angle between a vector x and positive horizontal direction. And here, phi of x of xi t is a new location of a particle x. And observe that away from the seed, the effect of deformation decays, which is captured by this Gaussian function. And here is an example of an elementary deformation called unisource forward. I have placed the seed in the center just for the purpose of illustration, and you observe that it has a certain range of influence expressed in terms of angle. Well, the same applies to the deformation called unisync forward. Well, now we can build a growth pattern of several elementary unisort forward maps, and here is a movie. And the result is a pure growth in one preferential direction. The color-coded plot here represents the Jacobian of the transformation, and areas shown in red basically show regions that undergo expansion. Well, and similarly, we can also build a growth pattern out of several elementary unisync forward maps. And here is another movie of a decaying tissue. Well, seeds turn on at random here or there. For the purpose of a formal study of the grid model, we seek for it continuous time-space approximation. And we perform this in two steps. The first step is a continuous time approximation of the grid model. And basically, the equation of motion is a stochastic differential equation. Given by 1 here, and it represents a Poisson-driven Markov process. Here the integration is with respect to counting measure nu. So nu is basically a Poisson, is a time-space Poisson process with given intensity, Poisson intensities, lambda t and lambda x, and d phi of x. Psi j is the size of the jump discontinuity, so this is the jump process. However, we can further simplify this formulation using the fact that the displacements are very small and the cell decisions occur very close in time and in such a way that the resultant change in the position appears as a continuous motion. And here is a continuous analog of the Poisson-driven Markov process. The solution to this equation consists of variable trajectories x of xi t, and this equation describes instantaneous growth for fixed seed xi seed. But again, the effect of this deformation is very small, as I already mentioned. And a visible growth pattern that we observe in images is the result of a large number of cell decisions. And we can basically obtain a deterministic differential equation, letting the number of events go to infinity on the right-hand side of 3. And we obtain so-called macroscopic growth equation, where on the right-hand side we have the the average increment, growth increment. Here, and F here is the Poisson intensity measure underlying the placement of seeds. So basically, this is the average value of of the displacement. Here is the macroscopic growth equation again, and we also would like to introduce a bounded measure A of xi. We will call it the growth magnitude, and in this formulation of the macroscopic equation, basically A of xi, positive A of xi means expansion of the area around Xi seed, and negative AF Xi means contraction. Well, having acquired two images of the gene expression pattern seen in the wing disk, image I1 we call it source image, and image I2 we call it target image, we would like to find the underlying diffeomorphic transformation and first the step number one is basically this biological data representation using the so-called Darcyan grid. Here are the images of the interpolated image function I1 onto the Darcyan grid, and this image is the interpolated image I2 onto the Darcyan grid of the wing disk in I1. So we would like to formulate our inference problem in terms of the Darcyan coordinates. Well, and here is the formulation of the inference problem. So we are looking for the estimate of the growth magnitude A of Xi, and also the diffeomorphic transformation phi of X of Xi. It's time dependent, so it's a diffeomorphic flow, an optimal diffeomorphic flow. Underline the dynamics of the observed expression pattern. This is our choice of the cost function, which is the squared error, basically the distance between the two images. This is the target image I2, and this is the deformed image I1. So we would like to deform our Darcyan grid basically in such a way so that the distance between the two images is close to zero. But the way we do it, we make another constraint equation. It is actually the macroscopic growth equation. So this phi mapping that we look for also depends on the growth magnitude. You can think of this diffeomorphic flow as the flow that depends on unknown parameter A, right? And we would like to find this unknown parameter A, and it's optimal value, right? And then automatically estimate the diffeomorphic, the unknown diffeomorphic transformation phi. Here are our initial conditions, and basically, our A hat, which is the optimal value of the growth magnitude, is the limit of the sequence of A of Xi t as time approaches t. And at the final time t, we would like to obtain a good estimate of our target image I2. And of course, in practice, we perform space-time discretization, and this is how the inference problem formulation looks like. Well, and seeds are here. Well, Xi I basically they span a finite range of integers in practice. Ideally, though, the seeds are uniformly continuously distributed over the over the wing disk. Well, and how do we solve this inference problem? It's a big problem because it consists of solving sub-problems. Well, first of all, we are find an appropriate representation of our biological data that we have obtained directly from images, right? We would like to represent given images in terms of Xi coordinates, in terms of Darcyan coordinates. And this is our first step. And step number two, of course, is image preprocessing. I have performed image registration, and the reference point that I have chosen is the center of mass, the origin of the Darcyan coordinate system. Basically, we apply principal component analysis that allows us to construct the principal axis of both Darcyan systems, and we align these images by means of aligning the principal axis of both Darcyan systems. So this covariance matrix, the way we construct, we calculate the covariance matrix is with the use of the coordinates of the Darcyan grid. And Xc here is the origin of the Darcyan coordinate system. Well, and you can see the result here, the result after registration. So both images are aligned as opposed to the previous result. And also, I had to perform salt and pepper noise removal, but I assumed that my images are ideal. But in fact, salt and pepper noise is inherent to optical microscopy system, imaging system. Well, and step three is implementation of the conjugate gradient method to find the optimal value of this growth magnitude A of Xi. And the reason why I have chosen this method is caused by the following factors. I have tried applying the steepest descent method, but it is inefficient. It's very slow, takes many steps to reach the minimum, and in fact, in a general multidimensional case, it really doesn't take us to the minimum. And it has a very nice property for convex function. It constructs either a finite sequence whose last element minimizes the energy functional, or it constructs an infinite sequence such that this A hat minimizes the energy functional. However, in life we deal with non-convex functions, and if you look back at the formulation of our cost function, it looks quite cumbersome, and it's not clear whether it's convex or non-convex. And of course, we are not going to test whether this function is convex. And it's actually a function that depends on, in my computation, it depends on 100,000 unknowns. So the best way would be applying actually the Paul-Lacreviere version of it in order to find the minimum of this constant cost function. And there is no mathematical theorem that guarantees that we will eventually converge to a minimum. But if there is a reason to believe that your functional does possess a local minimum, then basically some evidence shows that the repeated cycles of n iterations of this algorithm will eventually converge to the minimum. Again, it's experimental evidence. There is no mathematical theorem guaranteeing it. Well, I'm not going to go through all the steps of this conjugate gradient algorithm, just in order to give you an impression how complex this computation is, because here we have to compute the gradient of f with respect to a, and phi here depends on the growth, unknown growth magnitude a, so we really have to compute the gradient of the image, right? And well, and step number four, which is actually line minimization, also slows down computations immensely, and unless one applies a certain trick, I have approximated f with a with a polynomial, f of lambda with a polynomial of a third degree, because at each iteration here at step four, we basically have to reevaluate our image at the updated Darcyan grid with a certain value of lambda i. So it's computationally very expensive to realize this step, line minimization step. So and one way I have found is just approximation of these cost functional by a third degree polynomial, which saved me a lot of time. So basically we search for a minimum in a direction that is conjugate to all other previous directions. And there is actually a very small change. That's how this algorithm has earned its name, Pollack-Ribier algorithm. you basically calculate this parameter using this formula, and it makes a big difference for the speed of convergence of the algorithm. And basically this small change again makes a big difference. Well, ideally we would like to stop when actually the distance measured between the two images becomes reasonably close to zero, but we actually run into a difficulty here, because if we proceed iterating until full convergence, then this will lead to destruction of our Darcyan coordinate system. I have applied this Pollack-Ribier minimization algorithm to 100 by 100 Darcyan grid, representing the wing disk in image I1. And basically, we have to find 10,000 unknown components of the growth magnitude A. It's actually a function that depends on Xi1 and Xi2. We, in this experiment, we have chosen the step parameter 1, I have run 30 iterations, and actually the convergence again is really fast. And this is what happens to my Darcyan grid. I can show a movie. The very beginning. So this is basically the optimal diffeomorphic flow that we were trying to calculate. And if I proceed further with my iterations, I will observe that in the neighborhood of the origin, I will have intersection of lines, coordinate lines here, which is highly undesired. However, the estimate of the target image looks relatively good. Yes, and also before we move on to looking at the estimate of the image itself, this result looks actually quite interesting. Red regions are relatively uniformly spread in the ventral part of the wing disc, and they indicate basically locations of cell divisions according to the grid model. And we also observe that these red regions are combined with and they are actually neighboring with regions of contractions. And this kind of distribution of the growth magnitude over the wing disc can describe a certain growth mode where cells basically divide uniformly and they push neighboring cells, causing contractions, local contractions of the cellular field. So again, this is the distribution of the growth magnitude, and the growth magnitude is basically the amount of local contraction or expansion. And this is the corresponding diffeomorphism at time, at the final time, not really the final time, at time t. Well, and here we see the evolution of the pixel intensities generated by the optimal diffeomorphic flow. Observe that we don't have this black stripe here. Well, this is the initial image I1, and this is the estimate of the target image I2. Well, and if we compare our estimate to the target image itself, we observe that the ventral part of the disk is actually quite well approximated. This is the ventral part. But the dorsal part of the disk, well, I really don't see capturing of this light gray stripe here. But all in all, it's a relatively good approximation to the target image. Well, we can also look at the distribution of magnitude of the displacement, and they appear in a pattern of concentric circles accumulated near the origin. And this is just a close-up look what is going on near the origin. This is the displacement field. It may be also a computational artifact. So we don't know whether actually these images reflect a real biological reality of the larval wing disc growth. Well, what happens if we actually increase the so-called step parameter? And the step parameter is the range of influence of each seed. What if we increase it, say, to 5? And we again run 30 iterations, and we observe here that the color-coded distribution of the growth magnitude shows clusters of dividing cells. So this is a different growth mode. And again, these clusters of dividing cells have neighboring regions that are contracted. And here is the corresponding result of the estimate of the target image. This is the estimate of the target image I2, and we observe here in the neighborhood of the origin we have a kind of uniform gray level intensity. which is a quite undesired feature here. And here is the corresponding Darcy grid, and what is interesting about this result is that it shows, the Darcy grid shows basically how the organism deforms as it grows. We observe here also regions of contraction and expansion. So the Darcy grid serves its purpose. Well, I have already mentioned that in both experiments, basically the regions of contraction and expansion are combined with one another. And the distribution of the growth magnitude can describe the regions, can describe growth with regions in red designating cell division locations. Well, and it's also possible that this dividing cells push the neighboring cells, causing local deformations of the cellular field. And for a small step parameter, it actually looks like as that the divisions have taken place in the uniform manner as expected, because cell divisions are uniformly distributed. Ideally, we would like to see them distributed over the whole disk region, but still, this is a very promising result since it can be actually biologically meaningful and can reflect the reality of the growth of the wing disk during life stage of the development, larval stage of the development. And what I plan to do is next is conjecture the macroscopic growth equation in the discrete form. And we can study the property of this operator theta. In fact, we can investigate the eigenvalues of this operator, and if they appear purely imaginary and close to zero, then the solution then to the inverse problem of finding the unknown growth magnitude is not well defined. And here is the summary of my talk. I have introduced the grid model that is based on fundamental biological facts. Elementary deformation results basically from a discrete biological event. It could be mitosis or cell death or cell movement. And growth patterns are variable due to the random occurrences of active gene sites or seeds that are modeled as a Poisson point process. So this model captures the biological variability of growth patterns, and the equation of motion is formulated in terms of the Darcyan coordinates that are independent of the absolute space and related at the same time to the organism shape changes. I have demonstrated the estimation of the growth magnitude directly from the images of the wingless expression pattern using the macroscopic growth equation, which is the deterministic equation that predicts the internal structure and shape of a grown organism. And the way we perform estimation is done in two major steps. One step is image processing that removes rigid transformation and noise in order to avoid additional errors. And then we formulate the optimal control continuous problem and solve it using Pollack-Rivière conjugate gradient algorithm. And this algorithm constructs a finite sequence of optimal controls that is basically the sequence of growth magnitudes that converges to the optimal value of the growth magnitude. and then the optimal dysharmonic flow that matches the source and target images is generated automatically. And we have performed computations of the growth magnitude field and the corresponding dysharmonic map with different values of the step parameter. And we have observed that different values of step lead to different growth modes. If we increase the value of the step parameter, we will observe that cells divide in clusters. And this is the end of my talk, and here is the literature that I relied on. I would like to also emphasize that this book written by Pollack provides an excellent guide on how to actually program the conjugate gradient methods and how to use different tricks to make the algorithm efficient. This is all, and thank you very much for your attention.